This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students. Hello, we're here for More Happier, a podcast where we get more happier. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gretchen.
Today, we'll talk about a Beatles documentary that we love, Get Back, and we will talk about how to get more reading done. So, Elizabeth, what's something making you more happier?
I am more happier about the fact that I'm about to go to Puerto Rico. I'm doing season 2 of Fantasy Island, as you know, as I talk about constantly, and I'm leaving in a few days for Puerto Rico for several weeks, and I'm excited to go on an adventure.
Yeah.
Because I realize I just need these adventures periodically. I need to just leave and be doing something completely different. Now, granted, I've been there before, so it's not as big of an adventure as it was season 1, which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to go on an adventure where I actually know the people and all of that.
Yeah.
But we're staying at a different resort. We're shooting somewhere different this year. And after just being home so much, I'm really looking forward to just leaving, sort of getting on the plane and flying away.
Well, I wonder if that's one of the things that attracted you to TV writing is like you do have a very adventurous career. Like it's constantly a new job and new people and you've played different roles. And there's just like a lot of change in your job, much more than in a lot of people's.
Yes. And you know, one thing about me, Gretch, is I am not one who's going to say, oh, let's just fly to Europe and get on a train and see where we end up. Or I'm not going to research and do all this. I'm not adventurous in that way. What I think I like about this is that I have other people doing the planning. Like I like going somewhere and having to work there because I do see a lot. I do experience a lot, but it's like someone else is setting an agenda. And I think that I really like that kind of adventure rather than me setting the path. Obviously I'm going to miss Adam and Jack and Nacho, but they'll be fine. So I don't know. I'm just like ready.
Right. Yeah. You're ready for an adventure. I think the sameness of this time is one of the things that's
hard. Of course, last year when I left, I was like, oh, I never want to go back. Not because I don't love Puerto Rico, but because I was so exhausted.
Yeah. It was so intense.
You know, you forget. You forget.
And maybe you need a little recovery time between adventures.
Yes, definitely. All right, Gretch, what is making you more happier?
Oh, I'm more happier because of the night hours at the Met. You know, so I go to the Metropolitan Museum every day that it's open. So I'm intimately familiar with its hours. For instance, it's closed on Wednesdays. Mm. And a couple of times I forgot that it was Wednesday and I went over, trucked over there and then found that the doors were closed. But if you go on Friday or Saturday, it's open till 9 p.m. instead of 5 p.m. Usually closes at 5, which really means that like 4:45, they start kind of rounding you up and trying to move you to the door. But if you go on Friday and Saturday, it's open till 9. And so
Like, one thing at the Met is that there's lots of windows and lots of skylights. And so going when it's dark, it feels very dramatic and glamorous. Like, the lighting is very different from if you go during the day.
It's pretty.
It's often less crowded, and the crowd kind of feels different. And it just has a different atmosphere. Like, it almost feels illicit. Like, if it's dark outside when I go in, it just feels like, ooh, you know, it's very Mixed Up Files, Mrs. Baisley, Frankweller vibe.
Yes, it's romantic.
It is. And I really like that they do this, because I think it shows an institutional knowledge, which is like, maybe for some people, they can't come until later because they work long hours or for whatever reason. I just think it's like, it just makes me really happy to be able to experience something that now I've experienced so many times, but yet it still has new angles for experience.
It's interesting because you set an intention to go to the Met every day for a year.
Yeah.
And then the year is up and you're doing it. You're just continuing on.
Yeah.
Is this the rest of your life you're going to
kind go? Of, at least for now. I think it is kind of the rest of my life, because I do. I just love it so much. And it's just very different doing it every day than just doing it some days.
That's so cool.
But it was fun. Like, I told Eleanor, she and a friend were, you know, wanted to do something. And it's really cold here in New York City right now. So I said, well, why don't you go to the Met? Hmm. And they loved it. So I love going every day.
Nice.
At every hour. It's also fun to go really early. Yeah. So that's making me happier.
Good. Okay, Gretchen, let's take a break. And then when we get back, we're going to talk about Get Back, which I've already talked about, but now you've watched it. So we're going to talk about why it's amazing, what we've learned from it, why we're obsessed with it, all things Get Back. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book, so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase.
Okay, Elizabeth, now quality screen time, where we talk about a TV show or a movie that has been making us happier. And yeah, Elizabeth, whenever you tell me to watch something, I should just go ahead and watch it, because you told me for years to watch Mad Men. And when I finally did, of course, I couldn't watch it fast enough. You said about Get Back, you're like, you should watch it. I think you'll really love it. Yeah. And of course, the minute I started, I couldn't get enough. It's so good.
Yes. So for anybody who hasn't seen it, Get Back is a three-part documentary series on Disney Plus that Peter Jackson did, who directed Lord of the Rings. Yeah. And it is about the Beatles making the album Let It Be.
Yes.
And the idea when they did it was that they were going to do a documentary of them recording this album, and then they were going to do a show at the end. They were planning to do a show on television.
Yeah.
They hadn't been touring or playing for a long time in public, so that was a deal. And Let It Be ended up being the last album that they released, although not the last album they recorded. Right. And so they had many, many hours of footage, and this is, I think, 8 hours. And you and I both felt like we could have just watched it forever.
Yes.
Just want to see every piece of footage. Yes. It's fascinating. Yeah.
But I will say this, if after 10 minutes you're not interested, this is not for you. It doesn't change. It is watching the grass grow.
Yes.
I mean, on the one hand, they're doing it incredibly quickly because they're doing an entire album in, like, what was it, 21 days or something? So in a way, it's intensely concentrated. But minute to minute, you feel the hours that they're feeling.
Yeah.
So if you don't like it right away, you're not going to like it 3 hours in. So feel free to bail, I would say.
Yes. You're just watching the Beatles do their thing, basically. Yeah. And what you and I think both loved about it is it's really seeing the creative process at the highest possible level. I mean, as you and I are both Beatles fans casually, like
kind of, like the
Beatles,
like the average, of course, as one does.
Yes, but we are not Beatles obsessed. We don't know all the albums.
No.
We didn't know a lot of stuff before we watched this.
I barely knew their names, like who was who. I mean, I knew John and Paul, but Ringo and George, I was like, it took me a second. I knew, but I had to like
think
pause about
it.
Yeah.
But really, you're seeing the creative process. And I was telling you, like, initially how I loved that it reminded me of, like, the most amazing writer's room ever. Yeah,
okay, so why is that? Tell me, what is it? I totally get that, but, like, spell that out. What is it about it that reminded you of the writer's room?
Well, one, it's the stop-and-go nature of it. It's that someone says something, and then somebody else goes, yeah, and then sometimes that clicks. Or somebody goes, yeah, but they really don't mean yeah, and they go in another direction.
Yeah.
And then they're talking, and then suddenly someone starts talking about, or in their case, playing something completely different.
Yeah.
And everybody sort of goes down that road and gets maybe off of the creative, the focus of what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then it always comes back around. So that is really what a writer's room is like. And these guys are just doing it like to the max, where you can't believe they're actually writing these songs in front of you.
Yeah. And you hear them like go down what you to us sounds like a wrong turn, because you're like, that's not how Let It Be sounds, or like, that's not what happens in... What's the song that you and I, Elizabeth, were saying as our favorite song?
I got a feeling.
Like, you see it going in all these different directions. But it's interesting, Elizabeth, because it sounds like this might happen in the writer's room, where it's sort of like, is someone going off track? Or are they not going off track? Like, sometimes something that looks like a tangent is actually ends up being important. And so, and you see them being frustrated, especially Paul, where it's like, are we staying on task? Are we not staying on task? What does it look like to stay on task? Like, it's just, it's a creative paradox or tension, which is when are you working and when are you goofing off? Because sometimes goofing off is what ends up being productive. And you saw that happening with them.
Yes. And what you also see happening, which also happens in writers' rooms, and I'm sure all creative places, is the egos. And fragile egos. And like George Harrison, for instance, he actually ended up leaving at one point because I think he felt his voice wasn't being heard.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, you know, in the creative process, is that people feel heard. At the same time, if you have someone in charge, and we're going to talk about the boss nature of it, that person has to have the final creative say. So that was the other thing I just found really interesting, that all of them are so talented, but they still have fragile egos.
Right.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, that's just being human.
Right. They wanted to have each other's respect, and they wanted to be listened to, and Well, the other thing, it was interesting, and I know this from talking to you at the writer's room, is like there was a lot of humor. There was a lot of kind of clowning around and goofing off. And sometimes, again, it felt like, is this taking us off task? But then on the other hand, you're like, well, it really diffused the tension and alleviated the boredom of just the kind of the grinding, relentless nature of needing to like do what it took to move these projects forward. And so I thought that was interesting to see how they would play around or allow themselves to have those moments of lightness.
Yes.
Even where to me, I had a stress dream while I was, as I watched the documentary over a couple days, I had a stress dream on one of the nights that I was part of the process because you feel the deadline. And in the documentary, they show you the pages being crossed off of the calendar and you feel the weight of it happening. And you're like, you don't have time to goof off. But I know better. I'm like, there is time to goof off because in the end, that's what helps a team work better.
Well, a couple of funny things about that, Gretch. One, I think it would be hard for you. You are such a task-oriented person.
Yes. Yeah.
I think you would have a hard time doing this, you know, being totally in a collaborative environment like this, because I think it would make you really stressed and uncomfortable. I don't know you would enjoy being in a writer's room, for instance. And the other funny thing is the deadlines, I relate to this so much, and I think a lot of people do, with needing a deadline to get something done, because this deadline was completely arbitrary.
Yes.
They didn't release the album, right, for months or however long afterward. It's not like they had to hit this date. And they weren't even sure they were doing this TV show, and they didn't end up doing it. And then they could have just said, oh, let's just all come back in a month.
Well, and even the show, the live performance, it's like they ended up doing it on the own roof of their building. So they didn't even had to have the reservation. You know, they talked about various halls and places that they wanted to get that they ended up not getting. So in the end, you're right. It was all a fabrication. It was a goad that they could have disregarded at any time. And yet you did feel like it was really important that it was there, that it did give a kind of urgency and focus to what they were doing.
And there was a tacit agreement to nobody state that they could just completely ignore it.
Yes.
Because they all had to buy into this deadline.
Yes.
But, you know, they were the Beatles. They could do whatever they wanted. But everybody needs a deadline, or most of us do. You don't, but most do.
I like not having a deadline. I feel like it stresses me out, but that's unusual. But if you're collaborating, maybe you need a deadline.
And then, Gretchen, one thing I've thought about in terms of just the creative process and the fact that, you know, they would redo something for hours and hours, you know, and they had to do 14 songs, but they would get stuck working on the same song, just the same verse over and over and over, wanting to perfect it. And it made me think of this Yeats poem, part of this Yeats poem called Adam's Curse, about basically how poetry is really hard to write, but it needs to look easy. And I will read that section. It says, "We sat together at one summer's end, that beautiful, mild woman, your close friend, and you and I, and talked of poetry. I said, a line will take us hours, maybe. Yet if it does not seem a moment's thought, our stitching and unstitching has been naught." And that's the thing about when you see what the Beatles put into every song, and yet, you know, when you hear it on the album, it feels just so effortless.
Yeah.
That's really the artist at work.
But also they had that relentless pursuit of quality. That was what was so striking to me, is they weren't willing to settle, even when other people were like, it's good. I mean, I remember at one point Paul McCartney was like, well, it's kind of plodding. And I was like, well, that's pretty harsh on yourself. And then he said something like, somebody said, oh, it's good. And he's like, it's good until you decide it could be better. Mm. And just this relentless pursuit. And then at the end, it just seems like, oh, it just falls off their guitars. Yeah.
Yes. Gretchen, you know who else absolutely loves the Get Back documentary is our producer, Chuck, who's been in an environment like this. So, Chuck, we want to get your take on Get Back.
Yeah.
I loved every second of it. Yeah. I could go on and on. So,
well, what struck you most of like just seeing their process.
You know, what struck me is how low tech they were with it. You know, they were the biggest band in the world and they're tuning their own guitars and listening through these crappy Fender PA speakers for their monitor system. And they're having their little bits of toast and tea and, you know, running around themselves. I thought that was pretty interesting when they could have had anything.
Well, that's interesting because we felt, though, like they were very open to using new tools.
Yes.
Like they were interested in all these different elements. But I guess they were doing it themselves as opposed to sort of stepping in.
Yeah. Right. And I was taken how George Martin was less involved than he had been in previous albums. But I would say that Glyn Johns wins the wardrobe award.
Yeah.
The engineer.
Yeah, it was so fun just seeing what they wore every day.
It was.
And, and you saw, for instance, John Lennon one day came in and had clearly taken a shower and like dried his hair and he like looked completely different. It was like, oh, John showered.
I know exactly. Yeah. I noticed it too. It's like his hair is so light and fluffy. But the coats, the coats were spectacular.
They were great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's just so great to see their process in an era of the Beatles that was so acrimonious, at least the memory of it or what people think of is that period. But it wasn't that bad. At the end, I was like sad. I was like, you don't have to break up. This is not that bad.
You guys are having fun. Like you're jamming together. Like it you didn't feel like it was on the brink of a breakup at all.
No.
I know. I was sad too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when we come back, we are going to talk about things we learned, lessons learned from the Beatles documentary. But first, this break.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Gretchen, you know I love to socialize, but I need to do it in a way that's good for me, that doesn't drain my battery. And therapy can really help figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, so that you're not just spending out too much of your social energy.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GretchenRubin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GretchenRubin. You know, Elizabeth, it's important to me to be a treasure house of happy memories, but sometimes it's hard to frame something that you want to keep. Like I have had pieces of children's art that I really wanted to frame, but it's kind of unconventionally sized and it's hard to do. But FrameBridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or you can visit one of their 20 plus retail stores. FrameBridge custom frames your pieces in their studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free.
Gretchen, I realized I didn't have a recent framed photo of you and me and mom and dad, and I really wanted one. So when we were in Kansas City and took a great picture, I uploaded it, sent it to FrameBridge, and now I have a beautiful framed photo of us. See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's FrameBridge.com.
Okay, Elizabeth, so lessons we learned. I mean, you and I both felt like we took away sort of a lot of insights for ourselves from like these geniuses. And one thing I kept thinking of is, and you mentioned this earlier with Chuck, like, One of your things is step into the future.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, like, they were so eager to learn new tools. Like, at a certain point, different musical instruments came in. Some even just, like, little tiny, almost kind of, like, whimsical instruments came in. And they would all crowd around, and they were so curious, and they would pass it around. Like, they were so eager to, like, see what they could do. And then with the technology, like, that's interesting that Chuck was saying that they had their own hands on it. And they kept saying, like, these other bands have this or that, or we have, you know, we have 8 tracks, but we want 20 tracks. And they were, at least to me, it seemed like they were very eager to learn how to bring new tools into their process, where you might think, well, at a certain point, you maybe rest on your laurels and you're like, you know, what we do is good enough. And so we don't have to think about new ways or new elements. And so I thought that was interesting that they seemed very eager and enthusiastic. It was like it got them all energized. It wasn't like they weren't rolling their eyes. And I thought, well, that's good. Like, remember that
good
if you want to be creative, creativity can thrive with new tools, and so embrace new tools. So that made me think of step into the future. What lessons did you learn?
Well, the other thing that was interesting was how the dynamic changed when they brought in this keyboard player named Billy Preston. It showed how bringing in a new voice can completely change the dynamic. And it's interesting, again, for me right now in our writer's room, we're using a lot of freelancers. So where I'm actually experiencing that, where you have a vibe and then suddenly someone comes in and it's completely different. And it does energize, you know, to have a new voice. And they even commented on that.
They did. They did. I think it was, I don't remember who was it was, but one of them said, Billy, you've really given us a lift. They mentioned it to him in his face, and they also talked about it when he wasn't there, just saying, like, they were very aware that he had energized them. And like, when he walked in the room, he just sort of dropped by, and they, like, all sprang to their feet. And, like, he was an old friend. But it is interesting to think, like, maybe you need a new collaborator, or you need to bring somebody else into the process to bring to change the atmosphere, because he kind of changed the vibe among the room.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, even if you were, like, doing something at work and, like, bring in someone from another department to just get a new perspective, new eyes, just a new presence.
Yeah, new presence, because every personality matters. You know what also struck me, and at some points it kind of confused me, is they had such a calm way of disagreeing that sometimes I was like, are they having a fight?
Yes.
Like, what? Like, I don't understand, because they're so, they would just say it so calmly. And even when, like, George left the group, he didn't storm out. He didn't knock his chair over. No. He's just like, yeah.
See you around the pubs.
Yeah, I know, right? It just walked out. I was like, wait, what?
Yes.
And there were several scenes where they were really disagreeing, but they just had such a calm air. And to me, I thought, that seemed very wise, because it's like you can come back from that more easily than if people are, like, being very vehement and cursing and using a loud voice. It was all very, and maybe, I don't know if that's British, kind of that understatement, or it's just their personalities and their way of working together. But I thought there was a real lesson in that you can say your piece in just a very quiet way. And that also, I think it made it easier. Like, at one point, Paul McCartney and George Harrison were arguing. And the fact that they were just answering each other calmly, I think, kept it more conversational than, like, a big blowout.
Yeah, and a takeaway for me from that, too, which is interesting, is, like, they were old friends. Like, John and Paul, you know, 13 and 14 years old, got together. So,
isn't that amazing?
Yes. And I think what's interesting about that is they could have even had knockdown dragouts and still been able to come together. And so the fact that they didn't do that is interesting.
Yeah.
But also, because they'd known each other so long,
and
Sarah and I have this, we almost have a shorthand way to argue. You know what I mean? Because we've done it so many times that you kind of don't need to go there a lot. You can shorthand it. So
you can just kind of hand wave and be like, let's stipulate to the fact that I said this half hour's worth of stuff.
So anyway, it's interesting.
But also, like, okay, talking about you and Sarah. So Sarah Fain is your writing partner. She has been for such a long time, co-host of Happier in Hollywood, and you've been friends since high school. Do you think that having that relationship going back really to childhood, to the hometown, Do you think that that is kind of like irreplaceable?
I do. I really do, because it's a trust. Like the trust you have in having known each other's families and grown up together.
Neighborhood.
Yeah, you just, and having all of these shared experiences at a certain age, you just cannot replace that. And that's why I kind of, I feel like the Beatles, again, from all of us watching this, were still at their core. They loved each other no matter what was going on, because they had that childhood friendship.
Right. It's interesting. Yeah, you forget how young they were when they came together. I mean, they were young when it all came to an end.
Yes. I mean, when the documentary, weren't they only in their late 20s?
Yeah. It's extraordinary. But okay, but again, on this idea of how they related to each other, it was so interesting to me about this. Who is the boss? Do we need a boss?
Yeah.
Like there's this one part with when Paul McCartney said, I'm scared of me being the boss. I've been the boss for a couple of years. And he didn't want to be the boss, but he felt like he had to be the boss. Then at one time, Paul McCartney and John Lennon have a private conversation. And he's like, you're the boss. I'm the secondary boss. And John Lennon was like, not all the time. And Paul McCartney's like, yeah, all the time. So it's sort of like, who's the boss? And then at another time, Elizabeth, you had told me to watch out for this. They said they had this leader, Brian Epstein, who died at 32. And at one point they said, what was his role, Elizabeth?
He was their manager, I believe.
He was their manager. Yes. Right? He was like this visionary manager who helped them from the very beginning. And at one point they say like, oh, it hasn't been the same since Mr. Epstein died. Because, you know, it would be so fascinating if we could see a documentary, an earlier documentary, and see what role did he play for them? Because they seem to be missing that like, who's the boss? Mm-hmm. And people wanting to be the boss, not wanting to be the boss, wanting me to be the boss. I just thought that it reminded me of this Andy Warhol quotation that I think about all the time, where Andy Warhol writes, when I think about what sort of person I would most like to have on a retainer, I think it would be a boss. A boss who could tell me what to do, because that makes everything easy when you're working. And that's kind of what they needed. They needed a boss on retainer.
Yes.
Yeah. And they didn't have that.
Fascinating. Now, on retainer is important. So you only access them when it's convenient for you.
Exactly.
Saturday afternoon, they're not there.
Yeah. It's not a boss. It's a boss on retainer.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, so Get Back. Can't recommend it enough.
I know.
So, so good.
I know. This gives me a lot of leverage, Gretch. Next time I tell you to watch something, I'm going to remind you of this.
Oh, honey, you've won my trust. Like now, like turn it on that night. But now let's have a spotlight on a tool. We love to watch TV. We love to watch movies. And we also love to read. And so this episode, we're going to have a spotlight on tools that will help you to get more reading done, because nothing makes us happier than getting reading done.
That is true.
So one thing is there is a free PDF called Reading Better Than Before, which is 7 tips for getting more reading done. And I will post a link to that in the show notes. Elizabeth and I, we did a podcast episode because, of course, we did hashtag Read21 and 21. And in episode 310, we did a very special episode that is just full of our hacks and listener hacks about tips, strategies, approaches for getting more reading done. It was so fun to collect those.
Can I just say, for anyone who just can't get reading done, please just try audiobooks, because...
Yeah, okay, yes, give a pitch for
audiobooks. That is my request, is that please try audiobooks, because I've had a really hard time reading just with having all this work and my head buzzing and spinning, and audiobooks have really helped me up my reading.
Absolutely. And when people say, does it count? Of course it counts.
Yes, it does.
It counts. Okay, now the quotation. I am going to read a quotation. I love the work of Christopher Alexander, an architect who writes a lot about sort of the philosophy of architecture. He has a book called The Timeless Way of Being, which I love. I actually love A Pattern Language more. I will put links to both of those. But this is an observation that he made from that book. He wrote, "If I consider my life honestly, I see that it is governed by a certain very small number of patterns of events which I take part in over and over again. Being in bed, having a shower, having breakfast in the kitchen, sitting in my study writing, walking in the garden, cooking and eating our common lunch at my office with my friends, going to the movies, taking my family to eat at a restaurant, going to bed again. There are a few more. There are surprisingly few of these patterns of events in any one person's way of life, perhaps no more than a dozen. Look at your own life and you will find the same. It is shocking at first to see that there are so few patterns of events open to me. Not that I want more of them, but when I see how very few of them there are, I begin to understand what huge effect these few patterns have on my life, on my capacity to live. If these few patterns are good for me, I can live well. If they are bad for me, I can't.
Of course, now all I want to do is write down my patterns and figure out my patterns. So yeah. I'll report back to you what they are.
Okay, we'll swap. So Elizabeth, are you feeling more happier?
Yes, I am feeling more happier.
Yay.
Thank you to Chuck. And please get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin. I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Of course, our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com. For everything related to this episode, go to happiercast.com. Bye, Gretch.
Bye, Elizabeth. The best time to start a happiness project is 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
Are we supposed to keep doing stuff?
Chuck, just sort of take us through different expressions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just like if I'm talking and you're just paying attention to what I'm saying, you know, and they can cut away to one face. I'm saying something fascinating right now. I'm really fascinating, aren't I? Cut away.
From the Onward Project.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility.